see you tomorrow night for trivia. And then you guys have a great weekend. And we're going to the boat show because I'm thinking about the summer. And hopefully our friends, Colin and Patty, are going to buy a boat. We can hang out on it.
We will.
All right. Have a great weekend, everybody.
When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.
When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.
Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor, brought to you by Realtor Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Connect with Kim today to find a new home tomorrow via kimpurcell.ca. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer, Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Laurie, covering the return of Winterfest in Kingston.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
Starting February 1st, Spirit of Winter is taking over Springer Market Square with illuminated forest trails, skating, fire pits, and a brand new snow dome village offering cozy, heated spaces and treats from local businesses. This marks the second festival after a magical launch last year, bringing people together in the heart of the city during the winter months. Downtown Kingston events manager Sandy Griffiths sat down with CFRC to share more about this year's event. Last year's launch was truly magical. What did you take away from that first year, and what was the thought process going into planning this year?
Yes, so Spirit of Winter is going to look a little different this year. But I think what we learned from last year is that people really are looking for things to do in the winter. People want to get out. They want to spend time with friends and family. And so we're giving them a great reason to do that. Last year, Spirit of Winter really revolved around the projected animation that we were able to do because of a grant. This year, not having that grant, we've sort of pivoted a little, but what remains is a really fun opportunity to get outside and enjoy winter and all that winter has to offer. It's not going anywhere anytime soon, so we might as well get outside and celebrate it.
Mm-hmm. And there's a long list of activities on the docket there. What's new this year and what can folks expect?
Yes, we have lots of fun things for folks to do. Our s'mores pop-ups were the star of the show last year, which was a little bit surprising, but so much fun. So people will still have an opportunity to hang out around a wood-burning fireplace. We'll have s'mores pop-ups. Of course, there's the skating, and we offer skate rentals for those of you who don't have skates at your disposal. Our Enchanted Forest is back again this year, and we were able to add a few fun elements to it. So, we have little surprises all through the forest, which are really fun to discover. And then new this year, we have our Snow Dome Village. So in the amphitheater of City Hall, which is sort of that area around the Market Street side of City Hall where you go down the steps, we've built what we're calling a Snow Dome Village. So we have three beautiful domes that are heated. And essentially what you can do is book a time with friends and family. It's a 60-minute time window where you can enjoy the dome. We have food add-ons, so you can have yummy treats and hot drinks from some of our local restaurants. There's a heater in there, Bluetooth speaker, blankets, pillows, card games. So it's really just a nice opportunity and sort of a unique experience in the winter.
Awesome. And I was going to mention within that Snow Dome Village, we also have an art installation, kind of keeping up that tradition from last year. I was wondering if you could share a little bit about that.
Yes. So we have two fun art installations this year. Back in 2023, we did an event called Wawa Tag, working with our friends in the Indigenous community. And we had a number of icebergs in the fountain in Confederation Park. And they were lit to sort of mimic the northern lights. Some of those icebergs, you'll find them in Snow Dome Village. So we're bringing them back. And what we're also doing is we're giving people an opportunity who are either enjoying one of the snow domes or just wandering through the forest to hear again, or possibly for the first time, those Indigenous stories that were part of Wawa Tag. So there'll be QR codes all over you can scan. And we have a number of Indigenous stories told by Indigenous storytellers, which I think just brings a nice element to the festival. And then our friends at KCFF, so the Kingston Canadian Film Festival, and their mascot for this year is Conrad the Raccoon. And Conrad is very adorable. He is an almost 14-foot raccoon. And we're so, so happy that he's visiting the Enchanted Forest throughout Spirit of Winter. So you'll see Conrad on all of the marketing materials for this year's film festival. But Conrad will be live on location in the square throughout February. And again, we're so thrilled that we have such a wonderful relationship with KCFF, as well as Raw Design, who initially designed Conrad. But he's a treat to see. I think he'll be a fun selfie station for sure.
Awesome. And how can folks enjoy Spirit of Winter, secure their spot in Snow Dome Village, all that good stuff?
Yes. So for all of the information on Spirit of Winter Enchanted, everyone can visit downtownkingston.ca, and that is really a great resource for everything to do with the festival, from the times for the s'mores pop-ups, for skate rental times and rates. And if you're interested in booking one of the snow domes, you can do that right on the site as well. Like I said, there are food add-ons, and we're really excited about that that experience this year. And some of the feedback that we're getting is really positive already. So I think it's just a fun, fun way for people to get out of their house in February and enjoy all the good things about winter.
Awesome. And I was going to ask a little bit about that behind the scenes. You're in the midst of setup right now. How's it going? And what are you hearing from people as they're kind of walking by and seeing it all get put together?
Yes. Yeah, so we started the setup on Monday. The snow domes sort of went in first, and then we started on the Enchanted Forest, which is all set up along Market Street. Of course, we get people who walk through all the time, and they're super excited. A lot of people who remember it from last year who were like, yay, I'm so glad this is back. It really does turn Market Street into a sort of magical place. But yeah, lots of curiosity about the snow domes, and definitely excitement that the forest is back. I'm going to head back there now, and we'll see, see what's happening, what people think of Conrad. Everything launches on Friday, or sorry, everything launches February 1st, which is Sunday evening, and it'll run through until the 16th, which is Family Day.
Once again, that was Sandy Griffiths with Downtown Kingston speaking about Spirit of Winter, the winter festival lighting up downtown from February 1st through to February 16th. More details, schedules, and booking information are available at downtownkingston.ca/spiritofwinter. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. Next is Dinah Jansen with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, and it covers the inaugural TLTI Culture, Leisure, Recreation, and Sport Expo.
Thank you, Jesse. Residents of the Township of Leeds and the Thousand Islands will soon have an opportunity to explore everything their community has to offer, from arts and culture to sport, leisure, and recreation. The Township is hosting its first ever Culture, Leisure, Recreation, and Sport Expo in February at the Seelies Bay Community Hall, bringing together a wide range of local organizations, clubs, and service providers under one roof. Organizers say the event is designed to help residents discover programs, activities, and opportunities that already exist throughout the township, but may not always be easy to find. The expo will run over 2 days, beginning February 20th from 3 to 7 p.m. and continuing through February 21st from 9 a.m. till noon. Members of the public are invited to drop in during either time slot to meet representatives, ask questions, and learn more about what is available in their community. According to organizers, the event aims to strengthen connections between residents and the many businesses, volunteer groups, and organizations that support active, healthy, and engaged lifestyles across the township. From recreation and sport to cultural and leisure pursuits, the expo is intended to showcase the depth and diversity of local offerings in one accessible location. The township hopes the expo will encourage greater participation in community programs while also highlighting the work of organizations that contribute to the area's quality of life. People seeking more information about the Culture, Leisure, Recreation, and Sport Expo are encouraged to contact the Township of Leeds and Thousand Islands directly by phone or through its website. Thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with a story from the LGR reporter for YGK News, Owen Fullerton, about an exciting new addition to Kingston Health Sciences Centers.
Thank you, Dinah. KHSC will be the new home of samples collected from decades of cancer clinical trials as the Tumor Tissue Data Repository, or TDDR, and Queen's Laboratory for Molecular Pathology, QLMP, move under one roof in a new facility. The facility was built to accommodate the growing space and infrastructure needs of the program, as well as to allow for more simplified collaboration between researchers. The TTDR houses tissue specimens collected through clinical trials conducted by the Canadian Cancer Trials Group, CCTG, spanning back to 1997, while the QLMP can be contracted to conduct studies on those specimens, often seeing the two labs working hand in hand. The samples are maintained and studied to better understand how cancers evolve and respond to treatment. While previously one area used by researchers was within KHSC, with the rest being in Queen's facilities, they now move into a more collaborative role with the TTDR. Dr. Lois Shepherd, operational director of the TTDR and professor at Queen's University, says bringing all the research under one roof at KHSC will not only increase efficiency, but allow for collaborative relationships to build with researchers at the hospital network. The new facility will also see access to new equipment, allowing TTDR and QLMP to further build on past research. Dr. Shepherd says, well, things were manageable out of multiple locations. Being consolidated is a welcome change, and in the month that they've been moved into the new facility, she is seeing how it can bring more efficiency. As for the old spaces that house the TTDR, Dr. Shepherd said she's unsure what will happen with them, but there's no shortage of candidates looking for space. Since 1997, the TTDR has collected and stewarded samples from over 120 clinical trials.
And thank you to Owen Fullerton for that story. Now over to the LGI reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, with a story about physician recruitment in Loyalist Township.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca.
Loyalist Township Council approved another $20,000 in funding for their Family Physician Recruitment Incentive Program as they welcome more new doctors to the area. According to staff, discussions are underway with three new family physicians interested in setting up their practices in Loyalist under the incentive program. The township would see two new doctors in Bath and one in Amherstview. The township's operating budget in 2026 approved an additional $40,000 on the basis that two new physicians could be expected to join the program. But as interest exceeded staff expectations, the extra $20,000 was needed. The program began in 2023 with an incentive of $100,000 paid over 5 years in return for 5 years of practice in Loyalist with a roster of at least 1,200 patients. Since then, four physicians have joined the Loyalist Family Health Team in Amherstview under the program. The latest of the four to join, Dr. Jamil, was recently approved by the province to join the Loyalist Family Health Team and will be taking over provision of services to Dr. Goldstein's patients. Staff's report noted the payment is due once physicians obtain the roster of 1,200 patients. This is expected to happen quickly, but could still take until later this year to be confirmed. Mayor Jim Hagedorn spoke about the importance of new physicians in the area.
I've had very positive feedback. It's great to see the residents really happy that they finally have a doctor and there's opportunities there for them.
Deputy Mayor Nathan Townend noted the work of staff and the township's CAO.
I know she's worked very hard on this. This has been a priority of council from the beginning of our term, and it's so nice to see it continue to go from success to success.
CAO Rebecca Murphy noted how the program has benefited the area.
One of the doctors that's in Bath now was going to go to Kingston, but Kingston, their money had run out, and so they didn't have the incentive available this year, and so they came to us, and that's really great. But the even better news is that he feels that they're looking at expanding and doing renovations in Amherstview and in Bath to add more and more physicians. And I've begun talks with Kingston and neighboring municipalities for them to pay the incentive. So if a doctor does set up here but doesn't fully roster Loyalist residents and sort of shares in that we can benefit as a region too through this model.
Murphy also spoke about a company looking to bring doctors to the area under their own model, partnered with the township's incentive program.
This is an interesting model where a company is interested in essentially helping pharmacies with their business by setting up clinics within a pharmacy, and then they work on recruiting physicians here. The model is where the pharmacist manages the head lease, and then the physician and the clinic only pay overhead to this company to sort of manage the clinics. The company doing this is Verismo Health, and they have 33 clinics throughout Ontario and ran out of spaces for these kind of functions in the GTA and looked to Loyalist Township because of our incentive.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJPE, Brenda Little, with a story about attempts to raise awareness about scams in Prince Edward County.
Scams and fraud are still on the rise, with the methods becoming more complicated by the day. Constable LaBelle is a community safety officer with the Ontario Provincial Police who works out of the Prince Edward County Detachment. He wanted to increase awareness of scams and fraud, but more importantly, wanted to talk to people in person for a stronger impact. And what better place to do it? At their bank. Constable LaBelle is the officer in the branch offering information about scams and fraud, and it opens up the opportunity for people to talk about their experiences. 35% of the population in the county is people over the age of 65, and many are elderly and vulnerable. They do their banking in person, and they don't necessarily have computers. In many cases, a visit to the bank could be the highlight of their day or week. The Officer on the Branch program gives customers the opportunity to find out more about scams. I caught up with Constable LaBelle at the CIBC branch in Picton, where we chatted about the program. Constable, can you tell me about this program?
Yeah, so the program that I'm doing right now is called the Officer in the Branch. I approached a bunch of branch managers here in Picton, and so I could spread awareness about frauds and the common tips that we give out to our victims and how to protect themselves straight to the people that attend the banks in person. Spreading, I think, awareness right where the frauds happen and where people are doing their banking, I think, is a good way to outreach and kind of reach our clients.
And you have quite a bit of material here for people to take home and take a look at. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, we have here the little black book of scams, which is common scams that we see out on the road and how people kind of get scammed. And then we have just a bunch of pamphlets here and our lovely pencils and just
bags.
Just bags.
Yeah.
And really kids stuff for the kids. There's for kids that come here. And yeah, I think it's just mostly an opportunity for people that when they come and do their banking in person to speak to an officer instead of just over the phone. I think that physical kind of in-person approach might resonate just a little bit better than just a poster or an online kind of campaign.
Personal.
Yeah.
Personal. What would you say is the most common problem right now with scamming and fraud?
Like the most common scam that we see,
mm-hmm.
or?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's one most common one. However, I think the one that affects the most is the romance scam. The scammers are gonna try and prey on the emotion of the victim and try and convince them that they need to give them funds right away. So they prey on the emotion and they'll try and make the victims, convince them to make a rapid decision without giving them a lot of time to kind of think and kind of reflect on what they're doing.
That impacts the person so many on different levels. I mean, it's not just the money. You know, they get pulled in on the romance part. They're obviously lonely, so somehow it's, you know, making them vulnerable to that. They're huge, huge.
And it affects not only their financials, like you said, but it also affects their safety at home. What happens after if they were scammed? They gave out a certain amount of information, probably like their address, where they live, their phone number, so kind of leaves those people kind of very vulnerable. And what happens after the scam? Like, now I'm alone. Now they know where I live. They know who I am, my address, my phone, they know everything. So there's a lot more than just a financial aspect to it.
That's far different than the grandmother scam.
Where they kind of pretend to be someone else. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why here I didn't think about mentioning it here, but you probably know Sergeant Gus Scott here. He's a huge aspect of the neighborhood protect program here in the county. Let's just say our door-to-door scam, where people come up and say, hey, your eavesdrops are off, or I'm hydro, and I need to go inside your house to inspect the furnace. That's an example. Well, if someone says no, well, that was kind of sketchy, it's kind of weird that someone would do that, well, he can make a post on that neighborhood protect, and that would kind of alert everyone that subscribes in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think spreading awareness and spreading the information about the frauds, having a discussion with your peers, your family, your neighbor, your neighborhood, your employees, your bosses, and just spreading the information about the most common frauds that you guys see. I think just having a conversation about the frauds and what kind of frauds you've seen, it just helps to spread awareness and kind of prevent frauds from happening.
Constable LaBelle is the officer in the branch the last Wednesday in February at BMO and Bank of Nova Scotia in March, all in Picton. For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca and CJPE, County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN, Dan Jones, with a story about the Cornerstone Family Violence Prevention Center in Northumberland County.
Hi, I'm Dan Jones with CFWN in Cobourg, Ontario.
A new partnership in Trent Hills will see direct referrals to Cornerstone Family Violence Prevention Center for people experiencing gender-based and intimate partner violence. Cornerstone and the Trent Hills Family Health Team's collaboration is meant to increase accessibility and better respond to violence in the community. Christina Colachico, manager of community services at Cornerstone Family Violence Prevention Center, says gender-based and intimate partner violence is prevalent in Northumberland County.
We're really excited to share this new partnership between Cornerstone and Trent Hills Family Health Team. This partnership started through some discussions with the Trent Hills Family Health Team, their staff and leadership, just really about, you know, how to increase access for women living in that area to receive our services. And so it's just through that shared commitment to partnerships that we had this idea to do that. So initially it started, you know, about us utilizing space there to see clients, and then it really turned into us creating opportunities for their health professionals and allied health professionals to make direct referrals to us to help, you know, increase access to services and reduce barriers for clients who need Cornerstone services.
So is it safe to say that there may have been a lack of services in the Twin Hills area?
No, we've been providing services in the Campbellford area for many, many years. So throughout all of Northumberland County, we have other satellite sites, you know, in Port Hope and Colburn and Brighton. So this is just really, you know, an enhanced partnership so that the staff at Trent Hills Family Health Team can make those direct referrals. You know, we often see that sometimes women who are involved with a healthcare provider, they may share with that healthcare provider what's happening in their lives, in the relationship. And so, and it, sometimes it's a relationship where they can speak freely and confidentially, you know, about what's happening. So it's an opportunity for us to leverage that trusted relationship with that medical provider or with that allied health professional to help make that referral.
Okay. So just, can you just walk us through what happens in terms of a person goes to the Trent Family Health Team and they have this discussion and they may possibly get a referral? What are the next steps in this client getting some services?
So what would happen is the staff member at the Trent Hills Family Health Team would send over a referral to us just with some really basic information. And then one of our staff would contact the client to complete an intake and then help them schedule services. And we look at, you know, all the different services that we offer to help them get connected that way, as well as if they're in need of other services, we help make links to other services in the community.
In Northumberland County, what is Cornerstone seeing as a prevalence of gender-based and intimate partner violence in the community?
You know, unfortunately, we continue to see an increased need for our services. So if we think about last year, we provided services and support to over 3,000 women, children, and youth. And, you know, I think we're seeing, you know, a need across the province and also across Northumberland County. So, you know, having the ability to see clients in their home communities through those satellite sites, through a partnership with, you know, like we're talking about with Trent Hills, is really great. We want to increase that accessibility, reduce barriers, but we're seeing a need for services like ours across the province.
So, Christina, if a person is not a client in the Trent Hills area but want to access services of Cornerstone, how do they go about doing that?
Yeah, great question. So if you're a patient of the Trent Hills Family Health Team and you need support, you can either speak with your provider, you know, your medical provider at the Trent Hills Family Health Team or a member of the mental health team. Or you can contact Cornerstone directly. So you can contact us at our 24-hour support line, which is available at 905-372-0746. You can call our business line, which is 905-372-1545. Or more information about our services is available on our website at cornerstonenorthumberland.ca.
Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
And thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Next up on The Corridor, supported by local realtor Kim Purcell at kimpurcell.ca, is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the week. Thursday, February 5th, daytime high of -8 with 2 to 4 centimeters of snow in the forecast, feeling closer to -11. Friday, February 6th, daytime high of -3 with a crippling overnight low of -21. A little bit of snow in the forecast as well. We've got a very chilly weekend in store. Saturday, February 7th, daytime high of -17, but feeling closer to -32 degrees. Take care of each other. That is a frigid, killer cold evening. Sunday, February 8th, daytime high of -15, feeling closer to -26. And we get a slight warm-up Monday, February 9th, daytime high of -11, feeling closer to -10.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.
When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.
With Sam today. Sam's first time on the show ever, it seems like. But no, Sam is back after a brief hiatus due to being one of the best lawyer JD candidates at McGill University. So Sam, happy to have you back. And I hope you're excited to talk about some sports today.
I am, and thanks, Adam, for tooting my horn a little bit more than ought to be tooted for my academic abilities. But it's always a pleasure to be back with plugged in my ears. I feel like I'm a returning guest more than returning host, but that's all right. But yeah, there's lots to talk about, no doubt. It's hard not to mention the Olympics, which are just around the corner. Mm-hmm. Naturally, being in Canada, the first thing I did was search up Olympic schedule, and Google AI clearly knew that I must care about curling because no one else in the world does, since no one else has the Scotties like we do. That actually starts tomorrow, apparently.
Yeah.
I didn't think it did, but curling starts before the Olympics begin, believe it or not.
Yes, it does. So before like the opening ceremonies and everything. So, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to be tuning into the curling necessarily, but I have February 11th on my calendar circled because that is the first hockey game, Finland and Slovakia, which even that I don't think I'm going to tune into. It's at 10:40 in the morning on a Wednesday, so I think I'll be at work. This tournament is going to be so exciting. I am pumped to have NHL players back in the Olympics. It really does feel like we're seeing the best of the best again for the first time since 2014, right? So I think that this is going to be one of the best hockey tournaments that I've seen in recent memory. I like how long this tournament is. It's a grinding tournament. Like, you're going to have to use your backup goalies. You're going to have depth when it comes to this tournament. And I think Canada's got a good team for that. But Canada plays their first game against Czechia on Thursday, February 12th. So that will be an interesting matchup because Czechia is pretty good. I mean, we saw them in the World Juniors kind of coming up, but they've got a pretty good some pretty good talent on their Olympic team as well. I know they're highlighted by David Pasternak, but it will be an interesting matchup. Sam, any thoughts on that tough opening game for Canada?
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice if the men's national team could correct the ill doings and the losses and failures of our under 20 teams. I don't think that the Czechs are that good compared to Canada. I mean, I think Canada's really, really good. Mm-hmm. But I agree. I mean, the Czech roster is really strong. Like, their first line is not going to be bad at all. I think Canada can win that game, though, offensively. Yes. I don't think Canada needs to worry too much about its defensive play being a huge factor. Not because the offense isn't good on the Czech team, but mostly because the offense on the Canadian team is so strong that I don't think the defense are going to do much to stop the Canadians. If I'm not mistaken, I think the Czechs only have three defensemen that are in the NHL.
Yeah, they do have a surprisingly high amount of European league players. They don't have too many players in the NHL on the roster.
It's funny because the ones that are in the NHL are really good.
Yeah, no, they do have really good ones. Like Nietzsche and Pasternak are like some of the best. And then even on defense, I'm pretty sure they've got like Filip Hronek and Radko Gudas. So
yeah, they do.
It's a solid team. Like maybe not as threatening as Czechia's like youth teams because they seem to be like on the up and up when it comes to youth development in hockey. But this older team might pose a threat to Canada, might not. It'll be really interesting to see how they play. When it comes to goaltending for Canada, who are you starting in this game? Do you think this is a Binnington start immediately to try to see what he's doing, see what he's like? Or do you maybe go with Darcy Kemper or Logan Thompson for the first game?
Well, I just need to express before I say anything that, again, I believe that Sam Montembeau should have been on the team for nationalist reasons. Not nationalist reasons, sorry, but for federalist reasons.
Yes.
I think we're creating a big divide. But now that I've said that disclaimer, I don't know. I mean, I think we could start with Logan Thompson. Oh, no, you know what? We should start the tournament with the best possible chance of winning. Mm-hmm. In my estimation, that would be with putting Jordan Binnington in the net. I don't think Jordan Binnington's the best of the goalies right now, but I think players repose a lot of trust in him at the moment, particularly because of how well he played in the Four Nations Cup.
Yes.
Nonetheless, I don't actually see much difference between the three goalies. I think any of them could play. Mm-hmm. I do think Jordan Binnington's going to get the go-ahead, though, only because he played so well in the Four Nations Cup. Granted, I think you probably know more stats than I do. I mean, we were speaking about Jordan Binnington some time ago, and he was not doing incredibly well.
Right.
So, I don't know. I guess I would probably go with Binnington for that reason, but they could go with any of them, really. Like, do you find there's even much of a difference between the three of them?
I was thinking about this, and one thing that I've got with Binnington that I don't have with the others is Binnington is playing on a very bad team. The St. Louis Blues are not very good this year, and I think that that's kind of negatively inflated his stats. So I guess deflated his stats, but they've made them worse. And I don't think he's as bad as the stats say. You know what I mean? Like, I think that despite having struggled immensely, I don't think that it's all on him. I think it's a lot of the times the team in front of him. Because, I mean, you look at goalie like if Andre Vasilevsky and Jordan Binnington switch teams, I think Binnington would have very similar stats to Vasilevsky, and I think Vasilevsky would have very similar stats to Binnington. So I think Binnington is better than Darcy Kemper. Kemper does have a cup, so like he can lock in, but he also would played on Colorado, which was like a fantastic team that year and one of the better teams in the NHL. So I think that Thompson is an interesting one because I find him somewhat streaky, but I do think that Binnington is the best option going into this game. If he is, I couldn't say if he's going to be the goalie all the way through. Like if he goes into Czechia, if they go in and play Czechia and he gets lit up, or maybe they win, but like 6-5 or something, or 6-5 in overtime, and he only faces like 20 shots, then I think that maybe you definitely go to Kemper or Thompson in the second game, because the second game is against Switzerland. So I think that's another equally, maybe a little worse than Czechia, but another like mid-tier team before they really get into the teams that aren't as good. I think you start another goalie against Switzerland and then against France, who Canada plays third. You go back to Binnington to try to get some momentum and some confidence back, because that should be a team that Canada handles quite easily. Not that they shouldn't handle Switzerland easily, but they should. And that concludes the preliminary round for them. Those are Canada's matchups: Czechia, Switzerland, and France. So really, like, Binnington's got a... It's his net to lose, I think, because if he plays bad in that first game, I can definitely see them going a different direction. If he plays well, I can see him playing the first two, and then the third game, maybe they give off to Kemper or Thompson just to keep Binnington fresh for the quarterfinals. But that's my thoughts on it. Sam, do you have any thoughts on maybe the different strategy going into the tournament, or what would it take for you to not start Binnington?
Not much.
Fair enough.
I think all of our goalies are bad, I'll be frank. I think we have some of the last good goalies of the competent Olympic rosters. Mm-hmm. And I know that Alexandre Texier France is going to light up any of our goalies. Because that's what's going to happen. People are going to get lazy, and Texier is going to walk in. So the thing is, for France, do we really want to put presumably the best guy in nets, or would we rather let our third string goalie get lit up so it makes it seem like, oh, you know, if the better guy was in nets, we would have been fine? Mm-hmm. I think it's all about building confidence.
Absolutely.
But I mean, I don't really disagree with you. I don't know. If Canada doesn't win every game, we got a problem of colossal proportions. But speaking of colossal proportions, the United States have a serious problem of colossal proportions. All the best players that are American aren't on the roster.
It does seem to be that way, doesn't it?
Of a problem. Why do you think they made some of the decisions they made, Adam?
You know what, Sam? I think that they want to play a certain type of hockey, and they want to have a certain type of player for it, and that's what they went with. This is giving me the same vibes of the Canadian World Junior team 2 years ago. I think that they have their guys that they think are going to be able to play their roles and be successful for the team, but in doing that, they have ignored some of the highest goal scorers and point getters in the NHL. I'm at a loss for words when it comes to them having Vincent Trocheck on the team and not Cole Caulfield or Jason Robertson or Alex DeBrincat, because those three players have like double the amount of goals as Trocheck. Since the U.S. released their roster, Caulfield has 12 goals and Trocheck has 12 goals in the whole season.
That's crazy.
And the U.S. only released their roster like 2 weeks ago. And
the thing is, they would be the best team in the league if those guys were on the roster. Best team in the league, best team in the tournament if those guys were on the roster.
As a Canadian, I'm kind of happy that they're not choosing to take these three players. Because the one that really floors me, like, you can criticize Caulfield for his size and say, yes, maybe he doesn't work when he's not the first option, and which he wouldn't be on the States, let's be honest. Like, he would be... There's players that are better than him at scoring that are on that team, mm-hmm. like Austin Matthews. So I don't think that... I can understand that one. The one I don't understand is Jason Robertson, because he is big and he can score. He's literally a power forward. I personally think he's better than Brady Tkachuk. And, like, I understand that Brady Tkachuk probably has to be on this team because he's, like, mega and whatever. But, like, Jason Robertson is one of the best players in the league this year. Like, he had a down year last year, and he's shown up this year, proving that last year was a hiccup and that he is one of the best goal scorers in the NHL. So it stuns me. I don't, like, maybe Bill Guerin is going to say, like, Bill Guerin chose the team. Maybe he's going to be right about all this. Like, maybe this is like, maybe the U.S. is going to walk their way to the finals and win gold. But, like, this team looks significantly weaker than the Four Nations team last year. And I understand that they wanted to take over a lot of the same players from Four Nations, but you can't just ignore a 64-point getter. Like, he's over a point per game, Jason Robertson, and he's not on the team. That blows my mind. I understand Caulfield and Lane Hudson not getting added because they did lose a defenseman, and Jackson Lacombe got added to the defense. And Lacombe is a bigger defenseman, plays better defense. I understand that. I can, like, as much as a Habs fan, I want Lane Hudson and Cole Caulfield on the Olympic roster. I understand Bill Guerin not going in that direction. But Jason Robertson just floors me. And honestly, so does Alex DeBrincat. Because DeBrincat isn't much bigger than Caulfield, but he's having a hell of a season right now with the Red Wings. And they're one of the best teams in the league because of him. So
he's also a proven player, too. DeBrincat's been really good for a long time.
Absolutely. Like, it's almost just like, I don't even know how to explain it. Like, it just seems like stupidity. When you have these players right in front of you, I have nothing against Vincent Trocheck, but like, are you kidding me? You're saying you'd rather have Vincent Trocheck on the team than Alex DeBrincat and Jason Robertson? Like, that just doesn't make any logical sense to me. Like, even last year, I think I would rather Jason Robertson than Trocheck, even though Robertson was having a slower season. But I mean, that's my personal opinion on it. As a Canadian, as I said before, I'm happy that they're not going in this direction and that they're choosing who they want to choose. But I think this could be a team that doesn't even make the semifinals.
That's a big statement.
I mean, even their goaltending. Their goaltending, I used to praise their goaltending, but Hellebuck looks rough this year. I mean, who? Jake Ottinger is going to play for them? I mean, like, he's great. He's a good goalie. But you don't have the guys in front of him. You don't have the forwards.
But their defensive core is actually insane.
The defense core is insane.
Must make no mistake. That's by far the best defensive core I've ever seen in hockey.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, not all time, but this is kind of an insane defensive core.
It is definitely the best in the tournament, but you need to score. And honestly, your star players like Austin Matthews, who's kind of had like not an amazing season, at least an Austin Matthews caliber season. I'm just saying, you better hope he can score goals. You better hope they can figure it out. And they're getting beat up with injuries. Yeah. I mean, so is Canada, but I mean,
the thing is, Canada's best player isn't even in the tournament, though.
Who's Canada's best player? Carl
Bedard? Well, not best player, but like Bedard. I mean, not best player, but Bedard's pretty good, too. 43 games, 53 points on a horrible team.
Absolutely.
Celebrini was a great pick. Don't get me wrong. I think I probably would have taken Celebrini over Bedard, too. Mm-hmm. But let's not act like we made good choices on our team either. Mark Stone should not be there. Nick Suzuki should not be there. Not over Bedard. No way.
I think Suzuki plays a role. I think that there's a role there for him.
Okay, but if the point was that we should choose the best players because we just criticized the United States for not doing that, I would expect we should do that too.
That's
Nick
fair.
Suzuki maybe is a good role player, but he's not the best player.
I would rather Suzuki.
I mean, they're.
I'd rather Suzuki over Stone though.
Same. I'm just saying though, like, Bedard got left to the side over because of players that are just less good than he is.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, Mark Stone shouldn't be there. I'll be honest. There's so many players that could be there instead of Mark Stone. It is kind of a joke that he's there. And Tom Wilson having a good year, so fair enough, but globally not that good at hockey. But that's also my point, too. If we're going to say that Bedard shouldn't be there because he had two rough seasons, what about Tom Wilson's 10 rough seasons in a row?
Yeah.
It's not that he was actually bad. Like, I'm kind of being a bit rude to Tom Wilson here. He's pretty good. But my point is that Bedard was with a horrible team, played really well despite that. Like, the thing is, people were like, oh, you know, he didn't rise to his expectations, blah, blah, blah. Nor did Patrick Kane in his second year.
Yeah.
Connor Bedard still has the most points for a freshman and a sophomore on the Detroit Red Wings in its history. But, you know, Tom Wilson had two really good – actually, never mind. I can't really insult Tom Wilson too much. He's not been too bad, but
– yeah.
He's never been a point a game until this year.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, but like I said again, there's other players that don't play a role in my opinion that are on Team Canada, like Sam Bennett.
Shouldn't be there.
That I would rather have. I'd rather have Tom Wilson than Sam Bennett. I hate both of those players, but like, I'd rather Tom Wilson because Sam Bennett is just a pest and like.
Yeah,
he just got announced to the team because Cirelli's hurt. But there's Braden Point is having a rough year. Like, he's someone that I would not have on the team over Connor Bedard.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of guys in our team who shouldn't be there. We actually have not a very good roster when I think about it objectively.
I think
of all the Canadian rosters there have ever been, this is not one of the better ones.
I agree. I think 2010 was 2010 and 2014 was the best. I actually, my housemates and I were watching the 2014 run, the Team Canada run, and we were just amazed with how legendary Carey Price was in that tournament. Like, allowing three goals in six games, back-to-back shutouts in the semifinals and finals.
Crazy.
Like, and that Canadian team struggled to score. Like, that Canadian team wasn't, you know, I'm going to have to say 2010 was the best team, but 2014's team struggled to score. And really, I want to say they only won the gold medal because of Carey Price.
I mean, yeah, like, not only, but majoritarily because of that. Yeah,
well,
I agree.
Well, it helps when you don't give up a goal in the last two games against the two best teams in the tournament, Sweden and Russia.
Yeah. So. Although you're right, though, that 2010 team is going to go down as one of the greatest men's hockey teams of all time.
Yeah, I'm looking
at the roster right now, and this is just unbelievable. In nets, Luongo, Fleury, Brodeur, crazy.
That
the
is golden insane.
Era of hockey for us fanboys of Canadian hockey. But even then, the regular roster, the worst player is Brendan Morrow.
And Brendan Morrow scored a goal. He scored a goal in the tournament. So
he's the worst player on the team. That's my point. Like, our Canada's team was insane. Insane.
Yeah, no. And I do think this Canadian team is good. I think this Canadian team is good enough to win.
Hopefully.
I just think it's weaker than almost every other Canadian team that I've seen.
Yeah, it is. This is kind of a sad moment for Canadian hockey. But the thing is, there's so many good players who had a cross point. I mean, like, Crosby's kind of fading out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, fading out into the Crosby sense. I don't think Crosby's the guy anymore to take the puck end-to-end three times in a row in a shift. I think we can confidently say that torch is passed to McDavid,
mm-hmm.
or maybe to Marner. I mean, granted, I don't think Marner's in the same level as McDavid at the moment. But even then, like, it's weird. It's just weird. I find Canada such a weird place for men's hockey. There's a lot of pretty good players, but there's not that many tier one players anymore, and that's a bit of a problem.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like, and I think that's like what we've talked about so many times on the podcast about like the globalization of the game. Like, we've seen hockey grow in so many different countries, and there's so many different stars now from so many different countries. And you gotta, if you want to grow the game, you're going to have to like accept that maybe you don't have as many dominant players in the league anymore because you don't dominate the demographic, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's pros and cons to it. Obviously, I as a Canadian, I need Canada to win. Like, I want Canada to win. Mm-hmm. But when you look at it at a bigger picture, it is nice to see other countries at least putting together somewhat capable rosters that can make hockey more exciting. Because I think back to the World Juniors games, like the 2 years ago when Canada lost to Latvia, or like when Canada lost to the Czechs both years in a row now. Like, those were good hockey games. Like, they were fun to watch. Like, yeah, Canada came out on the losing end of all three of those games, but it was, like, at least nice to see how passionate those other teams were about doing well. Like, and I think that's something that we've lost in Canadian hockey is passion. And I think that it's, you can see passion in these other countries and the teams that they're putting together. So I think it's a give and take world, right? So it will be interesting to see, though. Group B looks pretty exciting. I know we want to talk about the Super Bowl quick, but Group B is Slovakia, Finland, Sweden, and Italy. So that will be a fun matchup. I think Finland-Sweden is probably going to be the best matchup of the group stage, because those are two teams that I could see making runs to the gold medal game. But yeah, no. Any thoughts on the winner, Sam? Do you want to make a hot take prediction here? Is Canada doing it for you, or are you going to go in a different direction?
No, I mean, hopefully Canada wins, knock on wood, but I mean, crazy take. I think, one, Italy's not going to win the tournament. They're going to at least tie one game. It's going to happen. Probably against the Finns. It's going to happen, though.
Okay.
But winner of the tournament, I don't know, dude. Like, Sweden, just going to throw it out there. Yeah. Don't actually think there's any reason for which they should win. I don't think they have the best roster at all, but I think they will win.
They're overall a good team.
Yeah, what's your take?
I'm going to go with Canada just because I do think that they have the overall best offense, and I think that that's going to be hard to top. I think the U.S. has the overall best defense, And then when it comes to goaltending, I still think I think that might belong to the U.S. or Sweden. But I do think that if Russia were in this tournament, Russia would be taking this tournament. We think about the goaltending trio that they would have. Bobrovsky, yeah. Shesterkin, and Vasilevsky.
Like those, who would be their best? Who'd be their like third line, fourth line?
I don't know. Crazy, you got your pick.
That'd be a crazy heavy first line.
You got your pick of the litter in the KHL. Like, got a great team, great league over there. Like, so many Russians are going back to the KHL and playing over there. Like the demographic in the NHL shrunk. Sweden is now like the third most populous nationality in the NHL. So like a lot of the Russians are staying home, obviously geopolitical reasons as well. But I think Russia would have a crazy team. I think that they would be really solid in this tournament.
Yeah, they probably would. Actually, I mean, the Russians likely would win.
Yeah.
But the thing is, they would be doping the whole time too. So
That is true.
It complicates the matter.
It does complicate things. Doping always does complicate things. Yeah. All right, let's go into just a quick talk about the Super Bowl before we finish up for today. It's this Sunday. Patriots, Seahawks. We've seen this Super Bowl a couple of years ago. Obviously, completely different teams, completely different coaches. But I think it's going to turn out to be an exciting game. Seattle was the number one seed in the NFC. And New England was the number two seed in the AFC. So you're getting two good teams that played well throughout the regular season. And here they are with the final game. But Seattle's defense is definitely the talk of the town because it's one of the best defenses that we've seen in recent NFL history. And Drake May and the Patriots offense, it's not the most dynamic offense in the world. So I personally think that New England's offense is really going to have its work cut out for them in this game. But it will be interesting to see if Sam Darnold and the Seahawks can get the offense going against the Patriots, who have honestly a really good defense as well. This is a very evenly leveled Super Bowl, in my opinion, and I think that just means it's going to be a great game.
Yeah, so it's funny, you know, I remember in the glory days when Seattle was still really good, there was this really famous YouTuber who went by the codename like EDP44 something. I mean, we'll not get into it, but he was a huge Seattle Seahawks fan, and you know, balls were constantly deflated in New England's quarter. But this is I agree. I think this is just two legendary teams playing. That's kind of the moral of the story here. And as someone who doesn't really care too much about who wins the Super Bowl, it's always a great time for a couple chili dogs and or some wings and
Absolutely.
Beer.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the essence of football. But if I had to make a prediction for this game, I think Seattle on their defense alone will win. Although I actually think this is going to be a really low-scoring Super Bowl, too.
Okay, I like it.
If I had to make a prediction, I would say they don't even eclipse 10 points, and it's about 10-3 or 10-7.
Oh, wow, really low-scoring.
Yeah.
Do you think it's like a game full of turnovers, or is it just like two teams that just can't find the end zone?
Just can't find the end zone. I just think the defense is really good on both teams, and I don't think either offense is that fantastic.
I could use a good defensive showdown. That would really tickle my funny bone, you know? I think I think that the Super Bowl is definitely a much needed break, and I'm really looking forward to sitting down with the guys and watching the game. But yeah, no, my buddy Jackson, he's a diehard Seahawks fan. So he's really looking forward to it. I haven't watched the Super Bowl with someone that it actually like matters to, like ever. So it'll be really fun. Sam, what are your plans for watching the Super Bowl, or do lawyers not take days off? And are you gonna have to walk through that one?
No, they I can assure you they most definitely do take days off, particularly Thursday afternoons.
Oh yes.
But
if only the Super Bowl was on Thursday afternoon.
Yeah, no, I'm sure I will be reading something while I watch the game.
Yeah.
And have a few beer with some friends. But no plans for me right now other than to watch and pay close attention to the game. And you know, it'll be good though. I'm excited for the game. I think it'll be fun.
Yeah.
And That's you know, it's the essence of football. It brings people together. I'm sure I'll be with. I think there's some plans for a bunch of people to go watch the game. It's too bad the Grey Cup doesn't have such a pull, though. I don't know many people doing Grey Cup watching parties.
I know what you mean.
But yeah, know, whatever.
No. I don't know. It'll be interesting. I think we're in store for a good one. It's in San Francisco, so it looks like it's going to be warm weather. I don't think any polar vortexes are hitting that part of the U.S. Yeah, I don't know. I think the sports world is really at kind of a peak right now. The Olympics coming up, the Super Bowl, doesn't get much better than this.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah. It doesn't. This is the pinnacle of sports. Yes. Really, in North America at least.
It really is the pinnacle of sports. And this is the Pinnacle of Sports podcast, plugged in my ears. And we're going to see you next week. That's all we have for today. Have a great evening, folks.